Today on Maine Calling, water safety, what you need to know. At the height of the summer, like today, nothing cools you off faster than jumping into the Atlantic Ocean or a crisp, clear Maine lake or river. Ah, heaven. However, it's really important to do so safely. Unfortunately, drowning deaths are up in America. For decades, they plummeted, but since the beginning of the pandemic, accidental drownings in the U.S. are up 10%, 4,500 per year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, on this fine summer day, we will check in with experts who have simple, smart safety tips for swimmers and boaters. What are your questions or observations about staying safe in the water? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downey's communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We're talking about water safety with two experts on the topic. Kirsten Reed, who is a champion swimmer who also gives swim lessons and advocates for water safety. And also today, Sergeant Carlton Richardson from the Warden Service, who heads up search and rescue services. Sergeant Richardson, tell us everything you do. I'm so sorry, my script has vanished. We're having some technical problems here.
Yeah, no problem. Good morning. So I'm Sergeant Carlton Richardson. I work in the Southern Maine area. And this time of year, it's just extremely busy with boaters. We have a lot of people coming in to the state to recreate on Maine waters. And at the same time, we have ATV recreation going on, search and rescue. So there's a lot of stuff, a little bit of hunting still going on and fishing. So this time of year is extremely busy for the Warden Service. But I would say the biggest primary place that puts us in the summertime is around the lakes with boating.
Yeah, I'm sure. And just to be clear, I'm going to reintroduce you all. Kirsten Reed is a competitive open water swimmer and a certified coach, and Sergeant Carlton Richardson, who is a supervisor in York, Cumberland, and Oxford counties. I'm going to go back to you, Sergeant Richardson, and ask you this question. What are you seeing out there? You know, we read from time to time about horrible drowning deaths. There was one just this year in Sanford. What do you and your wardens encounter? Are you encountering kind of the same story over and over again over the years, the reasons that somebody's gotten into trouble in the water?
It is, and it's a sad tragedy every time we have to respond to one of these cases, and a lot of them can be preventable, and the biggest one is life jacket wear. And I'm not saying that everybody that around the water needs to wear a life jacket, but it does save lives. And the biggest thing, it's a trend across the country that when it comes to boat crashes, you know, 80% of these boat crashes are involving drownings, and they're drowning because they're not wearing life jackets. So that's the kind of a big thing that we always push when we're on the water is, you know, wearing your life jacket. You know, the law says that 10-year-olds and under have to wear them, but we recommend that everybody's wearing them, because if there's a boat collision or something happens on the water where you're put overboard, you know, a life jacket could save your life.
Yeah, Kirsten, I'm going to turn to you. You're often working with really high caliber swimmers, helping them become better swimmers. But I know that you also work with those who are learning to swim and are a big advocate for just simple swim lessons. Convince someone who's never had swim lessons, who's made it to age 30 or 40 or 50 and can't swim. Why should we try at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I started coaching about 8 years ago, and I am floored by how good some of the people have gotten that could not swim one stroke, and they were terrified to learn to swim. I give so much credit to people who commit to learning to swim later in life, because it is never too late. And, to fall in love with swimming, is amazing. So I have a real range, adult learn to swim people all the way up to, I've coached Pat Charette, who is an amazing marathon open water swimmer, is swimming the Ocean's Seven. She's done six of the Ocean's Seven. She's in her 70s, and she actually didn't really start swimming until she was in her 50s. So, that is one of the messages that I want to get out, that it's never too late. But swim technique is really important, and learning to relax in the water is key. It's one of the most key things, and it's a really hard thing to do. Also, breathing. I get a lot of people who are pretty good swimmers, but they can't quite get the breathing right, and that goes hand in hand with relaxing.
And it's so interesting about relaxing because if someone is in a dangerous situation, Kirsten, in the water, say they've gone to the beach and maybe they're caught in a little bit of a current or they get out further than they want to, than they're comfortable with, relaxing is the last way
That
they
is it.
feel.
Yep. They're going to panic. They're going to tighten up. They're going to maybe hyperventilate. And it just snowballs. So, learning, being confident that you can tread water, that you could float on your back, that you could float on your stomach for a long period of time. If you got caught in a rip tide, you might be out there for a while. So, you have to, be realistic about your abilities and how long that you could last. I see a lot of people know how to swim, but they swim with their faces out of the water. And that is absolutely fatiguing. Learning how to put your face in the water and breathe to blow bubbles in the water is a much more efficient way to swim.
Sergeant Richardson, if you are you talked a little bit about boating accidents and collisions. Are collisions the most common accident that you're encountering?
Most of the times, I mean, we do have boating collisions, but it could be as simple as somebody falling out of a boat. We have a lot of, people that are fishing, trolling, activities, and we've had a lot of drownings that are around this. And, they go to grab gear, and now the boat steers away, and they end up in the water. And now either the boat didn't stop, and it's circling around them. So there's plenty of ways that it might not just be a collision. It could just be a fall overboard. And, the biggest thing when we look at swimming like that is the panic, is now they're in the water and now they're panic. And, how do you do breathe in those situations? And the other part of it is we have a lot more people on the water now too. So the waters are congested and that can kind of cause some of the issues of waves and they fall overboard because of another wake from a boat.
I'm going to ask you all. Oh, go ahead, Kirsten.
I have a funny little story, anecdote. One of my first dates with my husband, we went boating and we got up to Portland and a sort of rogue wave came towards the boat. He is kind of a talker. He turned the wheel. I flew straight out of the boat, fully clothed, and he kind of didn't notice I was gone. So luckily I knew how to swim. I did not have a safety vest on. Another boat came over and asked me if I was okay, and I was in shock. The water was really cold, and that's another thing I would like to talk about, at some point here, just the big range of water temperatures this year. But it's so easy to get thrown out of a boat, and luckily, I'm a very strong swimmer, and I would have been able to be fine. I probably could have swum to shore and with all my clothes on if I had to, but it's very easy to fall out of a boat.
Well, there's so much in that story that I think is really worth delving into a little bit more, Kirsten. Even though you're a very strong swimmer, a champion swimmer, what was it like to hit the water unexpectedly, fully clothed?
Absolutely shocking. Really shocking, because I wasn't expecting it, and it happened so fast that what just happened, right? And if you don't know how to swim, you're not going to last long, because I shudder to think how deep the water was there. And I think there had just been a kayak death recently in Portland. It was part of the conversation after we got home. And
And were you able to think clearly? Were you able to think, okay, I know what to do in this situation. I teach this. I know to, relax, lay, put my head back, try to tread water slowly. Or did you not do that?
I was laughing actually because I was so shocked, and I knew he was going to come back, but it really probably wasn't a laughing matter, and it was over quickly. But I could see how that could turn deadly for someone if it weren't me.
And Sergeant Richardson, something else Kirsten said reminds me of something I've heard over and over again. She said her future husband probably didn't even notice she was gone. This happens, right? Like drowning is silent. So somebody vanishes, and then it's a matter of minutes or even longer before someone realizes someone's gone.
Absolutely. I mean, it's no different than operating a motor vehicle where you just have so many things going on. You have your controls, you have your steering wheel, you're paying attention to other boats on the water, obstacles. So really, just like driving is their attention is really to driving. And when somebody comes out of the boat on a turn, they might not notice right off. And and that's like to even circle back with people that are tubing on the lake. And that's why the requirements are that you have an observer, because that operator is kind of looking forward, paying attention where he's going. And if that person comes off a tube or water skis, whatever activity they're doing, we need to know that they're in the water. And that's why we have those laws for the observer. So when you're operating, yeah, that's it's typical that somebody can come out of a boat and you might not know that they're there. And and depends on the type of year for water temperature, it does change.
I wanted to ask you all a couple more questions about obviously boating safety and water safety, but I want to get the phone number out for our audience, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. Sergeant Richardson, if someone is new to boating, because everyone will be new to boating at some point, what are some tips? I know my folks always taught me one hand for you, one hand for the boat, that you should always have one hand holding on to something on the boat. What are some other tips that you want everyone to know and everyone to teach people if they are taking guests onto their boat?
So one of the things that I highly recommend, is the boater education course. That's a new law that just came in place, this last year where it went into effect, that anybody born after 1999 is required to take a boating safety class. As our agency is, we recommend everybody take this course. It's no different than operating a motor vehicle and knowing, the laws. The different part of being on the water is there is no lanes or anything to follow, but there is rules in the water of how who has the right of way, where to navigate, what does this buoy in the water mean? If some of them mean to stay away because there's rocks. So really, to know the laws around it for the safety reason of who has the right of way, so you don't have that collision. But also, what type of gear do I need on the boat? Do I come up with a float plan? So there's a lot of stuff in that safety course that's offered online or in-person classes, and you can kind of obtain that information before even going out onto the water.
Okay, and Sergeant, let's shift from boating to just simple water safety. If someone goes to, say, a river, a swimming hole, and sees somebody they love out in too deep of water and panicking, what do you recommend? Do we swim out to get them, or do we find something long to reach out to them and try to pull them in?
So the first thing is if you have your phone, call 911, get public safety started, because it could save somebody's life the amount of time of a response. So really, if somebody's starting to struggle in the water, get emergency services started that way. Get a rope out to them. Try to reach to them. It really depends on what your ability of swimming is how you're going to effectively save that person. Because if you're not a strong swimmer and you know you're not a strong swimmer, that person's going to be panicked. So to jump in the water and try to save them, they could pull you under the water as well. So you really have to kind of know what your ability is. Do you have a life jacket? How far ashore? What's the water depth? All these kind of things come into play with that.
Kirsten, let me ask you a question. After your experience and knowing what you know now, when you're out on a boat, do you wear a life jacket?
I don't really like boating, to be honest with you. We have a boat, and I don't really like going out on it, to be honest.
You'd rather
So
just be in the water swimming.
I like swimming. I like swimming, yeah.
Okay, so I want to circle back to something you mentioned briefly earlier, which is water temperature. It's so
Yes.
hot out. Somebody might think, wow, it's going to be just great in the ocean. And it is. It's great to go in and dunk. But even though it's late July, headed into August, it's still cold in the water, and there's only so long somebody can be in it safely. Correct, Kristen?
I've
Kirsten?
never seen swings like I've seen this year during the last 4 to 5 weeks, and I'm in the water by myself, not by myself, don't swim alone, with my groups or swim or training myself. One day it's 75, the next day it's 49. And, I do try and check the Portland buoy to see what the ocean temperature is. It's not always accurate, but know your limits, know what you can handle. I don't like swimming with a wetsuit, so I did swim in 49 for, I guess it was in Kennebunk, so I did a half an hour in 49, but that's about my limit. But I know most people would not be able to do that even with a wetsuit. And so, if you're a seasoned swimmer, you do need to pay attention to this. Hypothermia is a problem for a lot of people, and it can sneak up on you.
And Sergeant Richardson, what about Maine lakes and hypothermia? I understand several of them are quite warm right now, but that's not going to last forever.
And especially the spring and fall conditions, and that's really the biggest thing with wearing a life jacket is you're out, recreating on the water. The water temperature is cold. We talked about, falling overboard or having something happen. When the water is cold, it really changes your survival rate. Really, even when you put your feet in the water, everybody has that gasp for air. Like, oh, that's cold. And so really the biggest thing is like when you end up in the water when it's cold, you tend to gasp a lot more. Which you can pull water into your lungs, and that's really where the panic really starts to happen. So medical events are more common when the water is cold. You can, have a medical event by hitting that water. So that's really where, when you're in a watercraft, you really should have a boat on, or sorry, a PFD on, just to, if you end up out of the water, that you have that chance to stay on surface.
All right. Well, we are talking about water safety on Maine Calling. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Already calls coming in, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address for a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or you can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are discussing how to prevent drowning and how to be aware of potential danger of water activities in Maine. With me, Sergeant Carlton Richardson, who is a Maine warden involved with boating safety and search and rescue, and Kirsten Reed, an expert swimmer and certified coach. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399 3566. We'll go to Henry, who's calling from Reedfield. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hi, I have an 18-foot Lund Alaskan tiller drive, and for this question, the tiller drive is an important element. There is a phenomenon called a death spiral. If, for instance, a pilot is ejected from a boat and the tiller goes either hard over to starboard or port, the pilot might be ejected, and then the boat keeps circling around because the tiller is so hard over to one side or the other. And my comment really is, in order to safeguard against that circumstance, wearing a tether to the motor for the kill switch is absolutely essential so that the pilot doesn't get caught in a situation where the boat might run him over after he gets ejected.
Henry, thank you so much for your call. Sergeant Richardson, what would you like to add to that?
Henry, I really appreciate you bringing that up. It's kind of one of my things that is true dear to my heart. I work under NASBLA, so the National Association of Boat Lauding Administrators. And that's one of the committees that I actually sit on is emergency cutoff switches. And it's not just for tiller boats, but any boat, really, you need to wear your engine cutoff switch. That's what they're there for. Kind of what he's talking about is that spiral is if you get ejected as an operator, a normal operation of a boat, that motor is going to tilt to one side and now it's going to circle around you. So now you're in the water and now you have this boat circling around you a lot of times at high speeds. And if you're in the middle of that and you get caught in the middle of that, you can get run over by your boat. You can be hit by the prop. You know, now the boat's hitting other things, which is causing more damage. It can hurt somebody else. So there's a lot of different pieces that come into these tether switches. So it's really important for people to hook this piece of a tether equipment onto them. So if they end up coming out of the boat or they're coming out of the operator seat, it automatically kills the engine to prevent that from happening. There is, a lot of the other thing that there is wireless cutoff switches. So if you're not comfortable of staying attached to the boat, there is a wireless ones now that will cut off when you hit the water. So it's definitely an important piece of equipment to be wearing.
Henry, thank you for your call. We'll go up to Castine and Karen. Hi, Karen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great program you're having today. This is Karen with Castine Kayak Adventures. And the point that I wanted to mention that I think is really important for people to understand is we have a lot of properties that leave kayaks for their renters. And also there are some organizations that rent kayaks that are recreation boats that are on the ocean. So a recreation kayak can be open in the bow and the stern. And if that boat flips over, the paddler, whether they're wearing a life jacket or not, are at high risk for not being able to get back in their boat because the boat will fill with water. So I think that people need to be aware of the right boat for the right condition and the right boat for the right water. So on any water, if you're in a kayak that doesn't have sealed bulkheads or sealed compartments in the front and the back, the boat can fill with water if it capsizes. So then the person can be in the water and be at risk of hypothermia. So definitely I'm a strong advocate of life jacket safety, but the proper boat is also very important. So you're not really doing anyone a favor by renting them or lending them a kayak that's not seaworthy.
Thank you, Karen, so much for saying that. And so many people this time of year looking forward to coming to Maine or going from one part of Maine to another to spend some time on a kayak. Thanks so much for that tip. I wanna read a Facebook post here from Lisa. Lisa writes, swim lessons should be widely available and inexpensive. In a state with as many rivers, lakes, and ocean beaches as Maine has, kids need to know water safety and be strong swimmers. So Kirsten, are swim lessons as available as they need to be in Maine?
Well, I would say that Maine is sadly lacking in pools. Our Portland pools are in terrible condition, and a lot should be done to fund or fix this problem. I think that I do not teach kids. Generally, I teach adults, but I get so many calls from parents who are desperate for lessons for their kids. So more needs to be done, and we need more pools.
I'm going now to Derek Seahagen, who's Director of Training with the Maine Boating Academy and Freedom Boat Club in Maine. Derek, thanks so much for calling in. And I know that many people who are going to participate in Freedom Boat Club are beginners at some point. In your experience, what can you do to make sure they are safe on the water?
Good morning, all. I just wanted to comment earlier, kayaks. I was Coast Guard for 21 years, and having kayaks in the water, there needs to be that orange Coast Guard sticker so that if a kayak is found, it quickly stops the search and rescue case. So I just want to comment on that. I was listening to that.
So yeah, sure.
Main, Maine Boating Academy. We're teaching on the water boat training, practical boat training, but also I'm director of training for Freedom Boat Club. So Freedom Boat Club really took on it was a great business. It still is a great business during COVID. A lot of people want to get out in the water. Now that we've got great boaters, we need to educate them. So we've taken my Coast Guard experience of 21 years, a couple other private organizations with on-the-water training to teach these brand-new boaters the basics on boat safety. And that truly starts with preparing to be on the water. And that preparation is gear, but it's also watching the weather. So I wanted to highlight that boaters have to watch the weather. Storms come up pretty quickly in the state of Maine, and knowing what the offshore wind and weather is doing keeps them safe.
I'm glad you brought that up, Derek, because that is another element. We've talked about water temperature, and we've talked about the crowds on the water. Tell us what can happen, what you've seen happen out there, how quickly the weather can change, and what that means for boaters.
So oftentimes when I was active duty Coast Guard and we do community lectures or question and answer, I would often comment and tell boaters that, we don't plan to enter the water with a distress scenario, but the boater has to be prepared long enough for the local or, federal state support to get to them. So that comes down to wearing life jackets. Life jackets have come a long way since I was just a young lad. Inflatable life jackets, incredibly comfortable. They allow for buoyancy should you accidentally enter the water, and then help can find you. So I would say that life jackets are very, very important. I commend the state of Maine for requiring age 25 years and younger to take that state boating course. I'm surprisingly finding still quite a few people that don't know that that law exists. And when I come across a young family with a 14 or 18 year old new boater, they're proud to say that, they're going to take that course, and it gives some great basic info and keeps people safe. So I commend the state of Maine for doing that.
Well, Derek, thanks so much for calling in. Derek C. Hagen is director of training with the Maine Boating Academy and Freedom Boat Club in Maine. Calling in now, Megan Sims, who's coordinator of the Maine Healthy Beaches Program, which is part of the Maine Department of Environmental Protection. Megan, thanks for giving us a call. We've talked about a lot of other safety concerns, but you are there to make sure that the bacteria levels are safe in Maine's beaches. Tell us about the program.
Yes, that's right. Thank you for having me. So the Maine Healthy Beaches Program, as you said, is part of the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, and it's a statewide effort to monitor water quality and protect public health at Maine's participating coastal saltwater beaches. We're not monitoring at freshwater beaches. And it's a pretty unique partnership between the Maine DEP and local municipalities and state parks. And the whole goal of the program is to provide water quality information for the public so that they can make informed decisions about where they swim. And we do so through a public website and a public data portal that provides all of the water quality data that's available for those beaches.
Tell us what the website is.
To get to the website, you simply type in mainehealthybeaches.org, and it will take you to the Maine DEP's Maine Healthy Beaches website. And if you click check beach status, you'll be directed to the data portal where you can interact with an up-to-date map where all beaches that are monitored in the program are shown, and any water quality data is available, including public health advisories.
And Megan, what is the concern? Why would somebody not want to swim in a beach where the bacteria level is high? What could happen?
So when there are high levels of bacteria in the water, there's an increased chance of contracting some sort of water-related illness. And typically those symptoms are GI-related and sort of flu-like symptoms, but they can make folks feel sick for a short period of time generally, but it's not common in the state of Maine to have water-related illnesses, but it's something we certainly want people to be protected from in case there is a risk in those waters, particularly those who are younger or older or have compromised immune systems.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for calling in. Megan Sims is the coordinator of the Maine Healthy Beaches Program. We're going to go to South Portland and Art. Hi, Art. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Art, are you here? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so a couple of comments. One would be that from the international perspective, we actually have about 350,000 drownings a year across the globe. So it's not just a local issue. This is a global issue. So we're losing almost 1,000 people a day to drownings. Another comment would be that water cools about 20 times as quickly as air does. So that's why being in the water is just much more hazardous and risky than any kind of an accident in open air. And if you're, you know, the inflatable vests they have now are remarkably unobtrusive and really easier to wear and much more accommodating to sort of human ergonomics than they used to be. And I strongly recommend that if people are purchasing a vest, they consider purchasing an inflatable vest that has 30 pounds or greater buoyancy. A lot of the vests that are sold are typically 15 to 20 pounds, 25 pounds of buoyancy. But the higher your buoyancy rating on a vest, an inflatable vest, the greater the likelihood is that your head would appear face up on the water. So I'll stop with that. You know, thank you for having the interests of all Mainers at heart here on the outdoor safety.
Thank you so much, Art. And Sergeant Richardson, what would you add about the newer personal flotation devices that you think our audience would needs to know?
Yeah, so I mean, PFDs are definitely getting more advanced and better to look at to make it easier for the public to look at what vest do I need. So a lot of the new life jackets, when you look on the inside of it, it's going to show that it's Coast Guard approved. You know, that's the biggest important part of it. But also look on what activity you're doing. So now a lot of these newer life jackets, when you look on the inside, it's going to tell you, like, this is a jacket for kayaking. This is a jacket for canoeing. It's not a jacket for use of a PWC. So if you're on a personal watercraft, you know, you need to look and make sure what life jacket is suitable for what you're doing, because they are all different. So that's the biggest thing, is to make sure that when you're wearing your life jacket and you're going to purchase a life jacket, using it is to look at, one, is this rated for my size, for weight, buoyancy, but also what activity am I doing, and is the correct life jacket for the activity?
All right. Thanks so much, Art, for your call. Kirsten, what about people who are open water swimming? What do you recommend? What kind of safety precautions?
Yes. Well, they shouldn't swim alone. I know some people are still going to do it, but that, you know, increases your risk. They should wear a bright safety buoy. They attach around your waist and they just kind of bob behind you. They should wear a bright cap. If you have a black wetsuit on and a black or white cap, it's very difficult for boats to see you. So you have to make yourself as bright as possible. There's safety in numbers. So if you've got a whole pod of people wearing bright colors, you know, it's a lot smarter. You should also have a plan. You should have a phone. And some of these buoys are dry bags, so you can put a phone in there if you ran into trouble. You may be a pretty good lap swimmer, but once you hit open water, it's very different. You don't have that black line. You don't have the wall to rest on. So you may find that it's a lot harder. You have to sight, and sighting is something that you have to work at to be good at. So, you could find yourself swimming out to sea if you were by yourself.
Thank you for that. We are talking about water safety on Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, or you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We are talking about water safety today in oceans, lakes, rivers, swimming pools, and when you are boating. My guest, competitive ocean swimmer and coach Kirsten Reed, and Maine Game Warden Sergeant Carlton Richardson. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. If you hurry, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram, or send us a quick email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll go up to Bremen and Susan. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. A couple of years back, our family took a canoeing vacation, a five-day trip down the Allegash with guides. And just to stress the importance of really paying attention to what to do should something happen. And we all had our life jackets. We were told to make sure you always held on to your paddle, kept your feet up so you don't get snagged on rocks should you go over. And we proceeded. And just below Churchill Falls on the Allegash, the canoe I was in hit a rock, and I was instantaneously pitched over into the rapids. But I held on to my paddle. I kept my feet up. I even snagged a water bottle zipping by me and proceeded to go down three sets of rapids. And just the amazing power and force of the water is pretty scary. It's pretty awesome. And it's just important to really try to not let panic overtake you and kind of focus on what you need to do to get down safely. My pants came off. I grabbed those. And the last thing I would say is this was in June, so I was dressed in layers, thank goodness, because I had a pair of tights on underneath. So if you're heading into the rapids, you might want to think of layers. So when you get to the bottom and crawl into your rescue canoe, you are fully clothed.
Susan, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. I can only imagine, and so glad you're okay. Sergeant Richardson, as you listen to this story, what are your thoughts about Susan's experience?
Yeah, I mean, really, when you're looking at any type of rapid water moving, the foot pounds of pressure behind the water is incredible. Really, like, you can get trapped easily into those situations where you're coming down. Talk about keeping feet up. Is now if you're coming down, you put your foot down, your foot can get wedged in between the rocks and making it extremely difficult to get it out because there's so much power of the water behind your leg to be able to move that, which can cause drowning in a lot of that situation. And also you have a bunch of, you know, hazards on the water. I mean, we're talking about Saco River to, you know, going up in whitewater rafting. There's any type of moving water can be dangerous. And we talk about strainers all the time, which a strainer is a tree down on the side of the water, something sticking out there. One of the biggest important things is never, ever go under a strainer because the amount of water that's underneath that, if you just choose to go under, you don't know what's under the water. So is that an entire tree? And now you just got trapped and you can't go back the other way. So if you end up floating in the water, you come out of a boat, you're swimming, you come up to one of these obstacles, you really need to work either going around it or getting over the top of it, but never try to dive down into a strainer because it could catch you under the water.
And to Susan's story, Susan, who called it for Bremen, Sergeant, she said that she's really grateful she paid very close attention. So if you're going on any kind of whitewater trip, follow Susan's advice and really pay attention when you're getting your safety training.
Absolutely. And, you know, especially those guides and listening to those safety briefs, they're for a reason and it could save your life in the long run.
All right, Susan, thank you so much for calling. Kirsten, Susan was talking about the Allegash River, but there are currents and tides to deal with if you're headed to Old Orchard Beach or Popham Beach, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, you can check surf line to check, you know, what's going on with waves and currents and the energy of waves. And riptides, I saw this number, 60,000 lifeguard rescues per year. Something like that. There, you know, riptides is one of the most powerful and dangerous things at the beach. And before you know it, you are heading out to sea and people just don't know how to get out of them. You know, you have to go parallel to the shoreline and you have to know how to swim a little bit to go parallel to the shoreline. And if someone's trying to save you, they need to guide you maybe with, you know, some sort of a flotation device parallel to the shoreline. So, you know, watching the weather, watching fog. You know, fog is a big thing in Maine. And if you're out swimming and the fog comes in, boats can't see you, you can't see the boats. It's a very, very dangerous situation.
Kirsten, let me ask you back about swimming parallel to the shore when you have a riptide. I have heard that several times Is that because if you swim parallel to the shore, at some point you will emerge from the riptide and won't
Yes.
feel that anymore?
Yeah, you'll feel that it will be less strong. All of a sudden, it won't have a hold on you anymore, and you will be able to swim towards the shore. But while you're in it, if you try and swim against the current towards the shore, it won't work.
All right, we'll go to Ron, who's calling from Lebanon. Hi, Ron, go ahead.
Hello. I was a ranger, backcountry ranger, in a place in Maine's Grand Canyon called Gulf Haggis. At the time that I was hired to do that job, to patrol the 10-mile loop trail in Gulf Haggis, the Warden Service was overwhelmed with emergency calls for injuries. And so they hired me to go in there, and I worked there for 2 years. And Gulf Haggis is a wonderful place, but it's very rough. And in hot, humid weather like we have, the canyon itself is basically slate. Well, slate, when it gets wet with sweat and water, it becomes very slippery and slimy. And oftentimes the slate projectiles in the water are standing up edgeways and are very sharp and pointed. So if you fall in the water or try to swim to cool off, you can't see what's in the water. The water is very dark from being stained from leaves and vegetable matter upstream, and the water is almost black, so you can't look down into it. And sometimes people jump in and land right on some sharp, sharp stones and injure themselves severely. And I've had to help people get out of there and go to the hospital in Greenville. And I've also had to call a helicopter and have people extracted when they were seriously injured. A lot of lower extremity injuries, ankles, knees, elbows from slipping on the slope and falling and landing on greasy roots and slate stone. So the Warden Service was very, very helpful to me. And at the time, there was a very famous warden by the name of Sergeant Roger Gay and Lieutenant Dion over at the headquarters in Greenville. And they were very, very supportive of the Maine Appalachian Trail Club and trying to educate people and train them on a daily basis so that they didn't get hurt and had an enjoyable hike. And one of the things that I did, people had a tendency to overextend themselves, and this was a 10-mile loop. If you didn't get started early in the morning, it was often difficult. You were running out of daylight, or you were running into the familiar thunder showers in the afternoon. So I made two trails that were cutoff trails, so you could cut off and go back to the return trail so you didn't overextend. If you got to that cutoff point, it was on the map that you could leave the trail and go back to your car. And it was quite an experience. My first.
Ron, it sounds like it. And thank you. I know the trails you're talking about. I know those cutoff trails. Thank you so much for the work you've done. And thank you for calling in and talking about the dangers up there at Gulf Haggis, one of the most beautiful places in Maine, but clearly a very dangerous place to think that you're going to, you know, go for a little swim in a swimming hole. Thank you, Ron, for calling in and sharing your experience. We're going to go to John, who's calling from Ellsworth. Hi, John. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that swimming in Johnson Bay, which is off Cobbs Bay, even wearing a wetsuit was intolerable after about 10 minutes because it's like that water is so cold.
Yeah, John, thank you for calling. And Kirsten, I see you nodding that a wetsuit isn't necessarily enough.
Yeah, sometimes you can put on two caps. You could get a neoprene cap to wear under your bright cap. Some people wear gloves and booties. So there are extra, earplugs are really helpful because sometimes you get that brain freeze kind of feeling. There are things that you can do. But if you're not acclimated to cold water, that can make it worse. If you start early in the season, it makes it easier to be able to handle the colder waters.
John, thank you so much for calling in. An email here from Bruce. I've been a strong swimmer my whole life. I have my parents and the Boy Scouts to thank for that. I was taking the Boy Scouts of America water safety test, which tells you how deep you can go in, and the mother near me started gasping and sinking. The Boy Scout in attendance didn't jump in. Turned out he had his phone in his pocket, a big no-no. So I swam to her and hauled her out. She said she had always been a good swimmer, but must have been out of practice. That's an important point. Don't jump in the water unsafely if you haven't been swimming in a while, especially if there's a current or a riptide. Having even a noodle in the water with you is fun. Use flotation. So, Kirsten, a lot of people swam a lot when they were kids, but it might have been 20 years.
If yeah, you might not have any endurance. And I see it all the time. Just because you know how to swim does not mean you can swim more than a length of the pool or two lengths of the pool without being completely gassed. And, I can swim probably hours and hours. But there's a huge gap between being able to swim a little bit and being in shape enough to swim consistently forever, all day pace. So know your ability, know what you can do, and be realistic about your abilities and
Yeah,
your
I'm going to go to
fitness.
Rosemarie from South Portland. Rosemarie, we're tight on time. If you could be quick, that'd be great.
Sure. I serve on the South Portland School Board, and someone was saying this is a global problem, and I wanted to comment that with our influx of immigrant, refugee, and asylum seekers, we're more and more aware of this, and we've had multiple drownings in the area. I'm working with a fellow school board member, Tandy Ratliff, and we're trying to start a pilot project to include swimming in the curriculum. Tandy knows a lot more about this than I do. Challenges are certainly both money and pool time. I'm really grateful to Tandy, but I think that it has become more and more evident that we really need to be teaching swimming to kids at a young age. And I just want to say, I grew up in Old Orchard Beach. We were not allowed on the beach to use flotation devices because they can give you a false sense of security where you can float out farther than you're really safe to do and then be in danger. So they were not allowed. I don't know whether they are anymore, but
Interesting.
they were not when I was growing up.
Yeah, Rosemarie, thank you so much. And I'm sure, Kirsten, you're an advocate of
I
everything
agree.
coming from.
Education needs to, swimming needs to be taught in schools. Yep.
All right, Rosemarie, thank you for your call. We'll try to squeeze in one more call. We'll try to squeeze in Connor in Bangor. Hi, Connor. Go ahead quickly. Connor, are you there? Well, shoot, we don't have Connor with us, it seems. Well, just a little bit of time left. I'll go back to you, Sergeant Richardson. If you have parting words for today, anything you want people to take with them as they head out on this summer day, what would they be?
I mean, the biggest thing, as we talked about earlier, is wearing life jackets. You're required to have a life jacket with you when you're on a watercraft. So that includes kayaks, canoes, paddle boards. You're required to have that with you, but wear it. Engine cutoff switches are important. And the biggest thing is just be respectful of people who are on the water. Take your safety course. There's a lot of families out there that are enjoying the water, and be safe out on the water and enjoy it, but be respectful as well.
All right. Well, I really appreciate both of you today. And I hope that those of you in the audience appreciate how important this issue is. Thank you to Sergeant Carlton Richardson, a Maine warden involved with boating safety and search and rescue, and Kirsten Reed, an expert swimmer and certified coach. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can find past shows and sign up for our newsletter, our weekly newsletter, maine@mainecalling.org. You can also download the Maine Public Vox Pop app so you can send us voice messages. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to learn about sustainable fashion. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.